Morning, Oregon, and happy Friday. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thanks for joining me, and I hope you enjoy the show today. Today we have the second and final part of a two-part presentation of the story of the famous Columbia River Scenic Highway and Crown Point. Yesterday, in part one, we went over the run-up to the project, and today we're going to talk about how it went, starting with the pitch from railroad executive Samuel Hill and highway engineer Samuel Lancaster, who asked the city of Portland to hire them to build a highway through the Columbia River Gorge that blended first-class engineering with magnificent scenery-enhancing aesthetics. Their timing for this pitch was excellent. In addition to Portland's desire to score on those pesky Seattle upstarts, the Columbia Gorge was a real problem that needed to be solved. It's hard to think of this today, but in 1913, Portland and the Dalles might as well have been across an ocean from each other. Traffic between the Willamette Valley and the east was either on a railroad train or a steamboat. Passage wasn't cheap on either one, and the journey wasn't easy. Everyone could see that a highway would bring great economic benefits to the region. Everyone also knew the tourism potential of the Columbia River Gorge would be enormous. By now, most of Portland's wealthy swells had outfitted themselves with automobiles, and the price of Henry Ford's Model T had plummeted as he got his factory dialed in, to the point where most Oregon families could probably afford one. But Oregon's dry summers and famously soggy winters meant most roads would be pretty unpleasant to drive on most of the year. So Hill hired Lancaster at his own expense to scout a route and draw up a plan. He scouted a route that threaded past waterfalls and scenic spots like the string in a pearl necklace, a park-to-park highway, as he put it, several times. The road would be specially oriented to frame picturesque vistas, and it would harmonize with the scenery in such a way that Sunday driving motorists would find themselves immersed in the scenery, actually being a part of the aesthetic effect rather than just observing it. There would be long stretches of viaduct running right along the edge of the river, elegantly arched bridges spanning gullies and cliff faces, a spectacular windowed tunnel at Mitchell Point with views out over the water. Modern reinforced concrete bridges would be faced with rocks carefully embedded in them to make the whole thing look like a rustic craftsman created it. Everywhere possible, drop-offs would be protected by a rustic stone-faced concrete guardrail to stop cars from tumbling over the edge. There was some resistance at first. One of the county commissioners dug his heels in, demanding that the project be narrower, uglier, and cheaper, and demanding that some earlier, less thorough surveying work that had been done be built upon to save money. Luckily, he was outvoted. There was also a good deal of trouble with the county surveyor's office, where professional jealousy was given free rein, to the point where the commissioners finally decided to hand the whole thing over to the state to manage. Oregon had just formed a new highway commission. There were also some property owners who didn't want to play ball or who were hoping to be paid more than their property was worth. Jenny Griswold, the owner of Multnomah Falls, demanded $50,000 for it. That's $1.6 million in modern currency, which seems like a bargain, really. She settled for $5,250, though, after the city of Portland threatened to condemn it under eminent domain. There is a link to the Offbeat Oregon article about Multnomah Falls 2 and the Griswold family's plan to use it to power a sawmill, or alleged plan, I should say. In his account, C. Lester Horn tells of a Portland businessman whom he is careful not to identify by name. I suspect it was Henry Vemme, the textile magnate who owned the first car in Portland. But whoever it was, he owned a business that did a lot of trade with hotels in Portland, including the Benson Hotel, owned by the highway's number one booster, Simon Benson. So Benson, after trying unsuccessfully to get the businessman to relent, canceled all his business with him. The businessman responded to the notice of cancellation by sending Benson back by return post, essentially, a notarized easement to let the highway pass through the property. For the most part, though, most property owners didn't want to be caught dragging their feet on a project that almost everyone was enthusiastically in favor of. Both Portland newspapers, almost all Portland civic and business leaders, and a significant majority of Oregon taxpayers were all in on this. Most landowners donated an easement to the highway without even being asked to do so. Benson famously personally paid for the footbridge that crosses in front of Multnomah Falls. While chatting with Lancaster, Benson casually asked him how much he thought a bridge there would cost. When Lancaster came up with a figure, Benson wrote a check for it on the spot. If Multnomah Falls has any competition for the title of crown jewel of the highway, it would have to be Crown Point Vista House, which you could think of as America's first rest area. It perches on the brow of a bluff just outside Corbett, overlooking the most spectacular part of the gorge's big picture scenery. It was designed by a German architect and built with cut sandstone and features bathrooms with marble and polished mahogany walls. The scenic part of the highway was built between 1913 and 1915, but crews were still working on odds and ends until 1921 or so. It was, of course, a huge success, both as a conduit for freight and for tourists visiting the waterfalls. Also, it was the first paved highway in the Northwest. By the early 1930s, the freight hauling aspect had nearly taken over, and the highway was always clogged with heavy trucks, so the engineers created a new highway along the water designed for fast travel. This eventually became Interstate 84. Meanwhile, the most scenic part of the old highway was preserved as a tourist route so that folks could drive from park to park the way Lancaster initially planned. The Columbia River Scenic Highway is undeniably a state treasure, although it never did achieve the Portland leaders' goal of helping their town eclipse Seattle in West Coast prominence. What it did do, though, was set a tone in Oregon road building and especially bridge building that would give the state its unique character for the rest of the 20th century and beyond. Key sources in this story included S.C. Lancaster and the Columbia River Highway, an article by Ronald J. Fall, published in the June 1973 issue of Oregon Historical Quarterly, Oregon's Columbia River Highway, an article by C. Lester Horn, published in the September 1965 issue of OHQ, Columbia River Highway, an article by Robert Hadlow, published September 19, 2022 in the Oregon Encyclopedia. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. And by the way, if you haven't yet, check out our Offbeat Oregon books. They're a lot like these columns, only expanded and updated to take advantage of a less restrictive format. We've got Heroes and Rascals of Old Oregon, Love, Sex, and Murder in Old Oregon, Bad Ideas and Horrible People in Old Oregon, and eventually the plan is for 8 of them to be out, although how many there are out right now depends on when you hear this. They're a lot of fun and would look great on your bookshelf. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do or to find the full citations and visuals that go with today's show. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Offbeat Oregon History episodes are uploaded every weekday morning at around 6 a.m., so it'll be a couple of days before you get your next fix. But of course, Monday morning will be here before we know it. And that's the latest news from here in Offbeat Oregon's Sulphur Springs studio. So now it's time for you and me both to go out there and fill up the rest of the day and the weekend with good stuff. Bye now.